More performance noise came from this audience than from any of the previous ones. There was also a section occupied by some 30 tough-looking dock wallopers, dressed quite unsuitably in formal attire. They remained motionless, glowering at the main curtain, lips in grim, straight lines. Smoke studied them from a peephole in the stiff material and did not like what he saw.
This was a fool's errand from the start.
Sally stood at Smoke's side prior to retiring to her seat in the audience.
Now, dear, Bostonians can't be any harder an audience than you've encountered before.
Take a look at those thugs in the monkey suits. $100 says they aren't here for cultural enlightenment.
We'll have to wait and see, won't we? Give them hell, dear.
Smoke Jensen walked out onto the stage.
Where's the greasy smoke leather britches? You ain't no mountain man. You look like a sissy boy from New York City.
Funny you should mention New York City. I've only been there once before. I'll be ending my tour there in a week. Now then, the mountain men were not ignorant louts, bent on the butchery of beaver and Indians alike. Many were well-educated men. One of those was the legendary preacher.
Weren't no Bible thumpers chopping fur and killing Cheyenne and Arapaho.
Quite right. You know, you are a lot more perceptive than I thought you might be. Let me tell you about the man who taught me everything I know about the high lonesome part of the Shining Mountains. Preacher was everything to me.
Once launched, Smoke's informative talk flowed around and over a steady stream of heckling. He hadn't time for their nonsense, and he made it known from the outset. Near the end, the insults grew more pointed and personal. Smoke bit back the urge to climb down off that stage and deliver a set of lumps to each of the burly men who had interrupted his talk. When he wound down to his conclusion, Smoke added a new summation.
So, if I rate as a mountain man philosopher, then I play a poor second-place Plato to preachers, excellent Socrates.
Who are them fellers? Never heard of them before.
I don't imagine you have.
Well, they come from your shining mountain.
No, they were from Greece, and they died more than 2,000 years ago.
At 9:45 that evening, Smoke thanked his audience and left the stage. In the tiny dressing room allotted to him, Smoke changed into clothes he found way more comfortable than the high, stiff collar and stifling cravat his stage appearances demanded. With his brace of six guns securely belted into place, he left to meet Sally and her parents, who would be waiting in a coach at the stage door. Instead of his in-laws and his wife, though, Smoke Jensen opened the metal-strapped door to find an angry throng of some 15 of his detractors from inside. Not the least pleased with this turn of events, Smoke quickly sought to identify the leader of this impromptu mob. He had little trouble doing so.
You're a fraud. You're no more mountain man than me, Aunt Nelly.
Who are you?
Seamus Quire and that too. Well, these friends of mine have come to watch me give you a right proper whipping, bucko. So make yourself ready.
You mean to tell me you only brought your fist to a gunfight?
You're a goddamn coward to hide behind your guns, I say. Where I come from, you take them off and fight like a man, and we'd soon see who is the better.
Where I come from, you don't allow anyone to pile shit that high.
By God, you're all wind, Smoke Jensen.
Smoke slammed a hard right into the Irishman's face, knocking him down.
Shoot him for God's sake, shoot!
A burly longshoreman came up with a revolver that looked ridiculously small in his huge hairy fist. He swung the muzzle in Smoke's direction.
Drop it, mister, or I'll send you to hell.
The thug froze.
What kept you, John?
Some of these wharf rats had the entrance to the alley blocked. I convinced them to let me through.
Didn't know you carried a gun, John.
I haven't, not since Rex Davidson paid a call on Keene. Though after what has been going on, I decided it might be advisable here in Boston.
Good thinking. I owe you one, John.
Smoke Jensen breakfasted with Sally early the next morning. Well accustomed to the ways of the West, Sally put away a substantial portion of ham, fried potatoes, and 3 eggs, along with biscuits and jam. She gently patted the corners of her mouth with a linen napkin, then rose from the table that sat in a sunny alcove of their hotel suite.
You have a matinee this afternoon, Smoke. I'm going shopping. I'll see you at the theater this evening.
Women and their shopping. In that amount of time, you could buy up all of Boston.
That's unfair. I have to come back here with my purchases and change for the lecture tonight. After all, Beacon Hill is some distance from the commercial district.
Is your mother going with you?
No, she's not feeling well. Perhaps after lunch.
Sally, you know I don't like you going around alone in a big city. There are too many things that can happen. And if they did, how would anyone know to get in touch with me?
You worry too much. After all, I'll have my friend Sam Colt along.
I was thinking of runaway horses or a beer wagon accident.
Oh, well, I'll stay far away from the middle of the streets. Don't you worry. Nothing will happen to me.
Sally draped a knit shawl over her graceful shoulders, fitted a small, stylish hat into place, and departed. A knock sounded a minute later. Thinking it to be Sally returned for some forgotten item, Smoke went to the door. The portal revealed a young man in his early 20s, slightly built with a pigeon breast and a boyishly eager expression.
Mr. Smoke Jensen, Oliver Johnson, the Boston Herald. If you have a few minutes, I'd like an interview with you.
I was just finishing breakfast.
That's all right, I've already eaten. But I could use a cup of coffee. This is the most opulent hotel room I have ever been in.
My father-in-law made our travel arrangements. What is it you wanted to ask me?
Is it true you've killed more than 400 men?
No, that is, I'm not sure. What I'm saying is, I don't keep score.
No notches on the old six-shooter, huh? I thought every hired killer in the West cut notches for his victims in the grips of his revolver.
Let's get one thing straight. I am not, and never have been, a hired killer.
Yeah, but
I've killed men in self-defense, or in protecting my property or that of others. I've killed outlaws stupid enough not to surrender to me or to other lawmen. But I have never been paid money for the purpose of taking another human life. To me, the only justifiable circumstances for that is being a soldier during time of war.
Did you serve the Union cause, sir?
No, nor the Confederate for that matter. That's why I can tell you I've never taken money to kill another person.
That's quite surprising. I understand your wife is traveling with you. What does she think of your exploits?
We've remained married long enough to raise 5 children to adulthood. I think that speaks for her outlook.
Seriously, she must have some strong feelings about the subject.
I'm sure she does. We rarely discuss them. But I can tell you one thing. You're getting entirely too damn nosy. I'll answer any reasonable questions about myself, but keep my wife the hell out of it.
Agreed. I understand you were engaged in a bloody uprising down in Mexico not long ago?
You've done your research rather thoroughly. It was hardly what you could call an uprising. In fact, the opposite. 2 old friends prevailed on me to help them put down an uprising by a bandit leader that threatened to take over the central region of their country. I obliged them.
And those gentlemen were Esteban Carbone and Miguel Martin?
The same. We go back a long ways.
But they are notorious gunmen.
Some say that applies to me, too.
Tell me more about them.
Smoke did as he was bidden. They extended the interview until an hour before Smoke's matinee performance. Johnson departed after exacting a promise for another interview over a late-night supper. And for some reason, Smoke looked forward to it. Her hands filled with bulky packages, Sally Jensen paid no attention to 3 burly, dark men in blue cotton work shirts who trailed along in her wake down Tremont Street on the east side of Boston Common. She had had her fill of shopping and now wanted to return to the hotel before Smoke left for his afternoon performance. She could have facilitated that by taking one of the many hansom cabs, but considered that a lot of bother with all her parcels. Instead, she decided on a shortcut through the park to Beacon Street and to Beacon Hill Road beyond. Near the halfway mark, the three men increased their pace and rapidly closed with Sally. Two of them grabbed her by the arms.
Don't make a fuss, Mrs. Jensen. Just come with us and do as I say.
Let go of me this instant.
We ain't out to rob you, missus, but you're going to come with us, like it or not.
Who are you? What do you want with me?
It's your husband we want, Smoke Jensen. We figured he'll come for you when you don't show up at the hotel.
At 3 o'clock that afternoon, Sean O'Boyle sidled through the Cambridge Street entrance of Finn O'Casey's on Charles Street. He quickly made his way to the table at the back of the saloon, where two men were sitting, quietly chatting amongst themselves.
A good afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Phineas Lathrop and Arnold Cabot looked up at their Boston henchmen.
Not to worry about our little project. Everything is at hand. Within the hour, the package will be delivered to the warehouse on Pier 7. By evening, the trail will be laid to the whereabouts of that lovely bit of goods. Smoke Jensen will be able to follow it easily.
You're certain this time?
Positive. By midnight, Smoke Jensen will be dead.
Patrons lined the rear wall of the lecture hall where Smoke Jensen would speak that night. Every seat had been filled 20 minutes before the program was to begin. In contrast to his usual calm, calculated demeanor, Smoke was pacing backstage, a dark expression drawn together his heavy brows and turning down the corners of his mouth. So far, Sally had yet to appear. He hadn't seen her since breakfast. Smoke stopped and looked up as a teenage boy came up to him with a piece of paper in hand.
You Smoke Jensen?
I am.
Here, this is for you.
We've got your wife.
Wait a minute, kid!
Who gave you this?
It was just a man. A big one. Not like you, but thick through the shoulders and chest.
Tell me more.
Sure, but let me go, okay? He had real black hair, short and curly, a Mick face.
What do you mean?
He looked like Paddy on the railway to me.
Did this Irishman have a name?
No, well, I don't know. He didn't give me one.
If you're holding something back, you'll be sorry, boy.
You can't touch me! We got a child protection league in Boston!
Uh-huh, and I have a gun with 6 reasons why you should start talking.
Honest, I don't know his name. I seen him around, though.
Where?
Places! Like on the docks, outside the gin mill, and that sort of place.
All right. You've saved yourself from a world of hurt. I want you to take me to the exact place where he gave you the message.
Must be pretty damn important.
Believe me, it is.
Oliver Johnson was standing close by, notepad in hand.
Just what is in the note, Smoke?
It occurred to Smoke that he had not read beyond the first 4 words. He delayed his answer to Johnson, opened the scrap of paper, and read the entire contents.
It's from someone calling themselves the Defenders of Aaron. It says that Sally will be released unharmed if I do what they say.
And what's that?
I'm to go to a place called Pier 7 alone, to walk down the center of the pier to the far end. There's a building there, a warehouse. I'm to go inside.
That's where O'Boyle and his anarchist union thugs hang out. Not a place you'd want to be going in the best of times. Certainly not at 10:30 at night.
What do you suggest?
Truth to tell, I'd say don't go. But that's not what you're going to do, I can tell. I'll go with you.
All right. If this is as dangerous as you suggest, it might be good if you knew how to use a gun.
As it happens, I know a little about shooting. Nothing to match your skill, but satisfactory for around here.
Well then, let's not waste any more time.
Smoke and Oliver had taken a carriage, and they stopped a few blocks before Pier 7. The carriage had disgorged its occupants, and Smoke and Oliver quickly made their way to the warehouses of the pier. Assessing the situation, Smoke decided to make his way to the top of one of the warehouses. Smoke climbed a ladder, then worked his way along a catwalk until he reached the far end. His gaze reached the black, oily water of the upper end of Boston Harbor, where it received the outpouring of the Charles River. Smoke listened in on the discussion of tactics and glanced toward the street end of the warehouse in time to spot the approach of Oliver Johnson. He knew at once he occupied a disadvantageous spot. Starlight picked out a duplicate of the first ladder at the other end. Smoke eased himself along the steep pitch of the roof until he reached it. He lowered himself down the rungs. Two men materialized out of the deep shadows between large bales of some sort and made a dash towards Oliver Johnson, who had walked beyond their hiding place and had his back to him. Smoke set a foot on the next lower rung and held on with one hand while he hauled out his .45 Peacemaker. Smoke let go and dropped the rest of the way to the dock flooring. Three more men came pouring out toward Oliver, one with an even smaller revolver than Johnson's on the way to line up with the reporter's chest. Oliver was a split second faster.
Smoke, I think there's more of them than we expected.
Five of the longshoremen were assigned to guard Sally Jensen in an office cubicle of a warehouse, Connor O'Fallon and Sean O'Boyle among them. Both men had been drinking heavily, celebrating the anticipated demise of Sally's husband.
What the hell does Lathrop want this Smoke Jensen dead for anyway?
Oh, it's all part of a grand plan, Connor. Aye, it is. What got us into it, a boyo working for Mr. Lathrop didn't do his job right. Both the Jensens was to die in an avalanche, they was.
Oh, good Lord. Any man who can walk away from tons of snow is more than I want to cross knuckles with.
Ah, don't worry, lad. This ruckus will be over in a few minutes and the door will be wide open.
What door? Damn it, Sean.
Why, only the door to the entire West, bucko. You know yourself that the big-time fixtures and most of the boys on the dodge on the East Coast have come to the same conclusion that Mr. Lathrop has, don't you? The police are getting too much power. Now they've made it against the law for a man to carry a gun in nearly every city. Not even honest folk are safe from their oppression, they're not. Why, once Smoke Jensen's taken care of, our Irish gangs and others of the Brotherhood will be ready to pull out of here and head west.
Well, when's all this to happen?
Oh, we're supposed to go soon as Jensen's taken care of, we are. Mr. Lathrop and two of his partners, Middleton and Asher, are to leave from New York City before the end of the week and join up with 20 men, handpicked by me, in some place called Dodge City. Ah, think of it, bucko. We'll all be rich as English lords, we will.
Ah, English lords be damned to hellfire! They had me pap strung up, they did.
Oh, did they now?
True. Hey, so what makes Smoke Jensen so important he has to be killed?
Oh, now that's something in itself it is. Seems as Jensen is some sort of leader amongst the folks out there in Colorado. They look up to him, they do. Alone, they say, he's a power to deal with. And if he led the locals against us, we'd be in a bad position. Lathrop figures they could run us clear and hell gone out of there. There's lots of land out there in those mountains areas. More than 150 miles on a side, Lathrop told me. He wants to make his headquarters at the ranch owned by Jensen. The Sugarloaf, it's called. With Jensen gone, it's all ours for the taking.
Just then, Seamus Quirn burst in.
By God, Jensen's on three of the boys in the twinkling of an eye!
Ah, shite. You boys go along and give Seamus a hand. Cutter and I'll stay here with the skirt. You know, there's another reason Lathrop wants Smoke Jensen to die.
And what would that be?
I don't have the whole of it, but I gather there's bad blood betwixt the two of them. Lathrop has this half-brother who ran afoul of Jensen some while back. He had a sort of a little empire going, much like what Lathrop wants to do, only a lot smaller. He crossed Smoke Jensen, and he paid the price. Jensen killed him.
Ah, it's said that Jensen killed a lot of men. Any idea which one it was?
Oh, I've the name all right. Phineas Lathrop's half-brother was a crazy bastard named Rex Davidson.
Five more men came in a rush from the doorway behind Smoke Jensen. They'd remained out of sight in the bowels of the warehouse during the initial attempt to ambush the mountain man. Now they spread out and closed on Smoke and Oliver. Three held longshoremen's hooks. Moonlight flashed off the keen edges of the long, slim knives in the hands of the other two. Smoke's first inclination was to holster his Colt and take him on a more even standing. Then Seamus Quirn joined his last upright fighters, and Smoke saw the revolver in his hand.
Take him down, Oliver!
Smoke started at once for the door to the warehouse.
If Sally is here, we'll find her.
Seamus O'Boyle staggered into the small warehouse office cubicle where his boss held the woman captive.
Well, is it over then?
Aye, only not like you'd expect it, Ed. They're all down, every man jack one of them. That Smoke tent is a tower, and there was two of them.
We gotta get out of here, we do.
Oh, I know, there's a back way.
Oh, goddammit, Connor, don't you think I know that?
Well, we'd best be taking it, hadn't we?
What about the woman?
Leave her, she'd only slow us down.
You're the boss, Sean.
Quickly, the trio left the office.
There they go, Smoke.
Oh, shite, me ear!
Smoke and Oliver began to run now, guided by the dim yellow glow of a lamp in the office. Smoke ignored the fleeing felons. Only one goal directed him. He had to know the whereabouts of Sally. Was he going to find her still alive in that office?
Sally? Sally!
Smoke bent and swiftly cut through the bonds that restrained Sally's hands, then knelt to slice the heavy cord that secured her ankles. Then he rose and pulled the gag away.
It's all right, Sal. You're safe now.
Oh, I may be, but you're not.
Quickly, Sally recounted what the inebriated Sean O'Boyle had said about Phineas Lathrop and his grand design on the High Lonesome.
That terrible man O'Boyle said Lathrop plans to make his headquarters at the Sugarloaf. To do that, he knew he'd have to have you killed. In fact, that avalanche was planned to kill us both.
His men have tried a couple of times since and failed. I don't imagine we'll see Mr. O'Boyle again.
There's more, honey. Lathrop is related to someone who came very near to killing you. He's half-brother to Rex Davidson and considers this a personal affair between you and him.
I'll worry about that later. Now, let's get you out of here.
Determined to carry out their assigned task of eliminating the famous gunfighter, Sean O'Boyle and his two associates set out to locate more of their men. Three blocks from the warehouse, they came upon 15 more of O'Boyle's bully boys.
Going to 7th Street!
O'Boyle added a description of Smoke and Sally Jensen, and Seamus Quirn contributed details on Oliver Johnson.
Seamus, you go back with them. I want you to make sure not a one of them leaves there alive.
While they made a hasty exit from the warehouse, Smoke Jensen introduced Sally to Oliver Johnson. He immediately became Ollie to her. They had only rounded the shoreward end of the building when 16 burly longshoremen appeared inside the gate.
There they are! Let's get them, boys!
Back to the warehouse. We'll have a better chance there. These Easterners are the lousiest shots I've ever seen.
Not much opportunity for practice in the big cities.
I can see that.
The trio banged through a narrow doorway. Smoke slammed and barred the door behind them.
But you think they could go out in the country and improve their damn skills?
Most of that bunch would be lost a mile away from the Charles River. Besides, do you seriously want them to be better marksmen?
You had me there.
Damn. I didn't count on a protracted gunfight.
Does that thing chamber 38 long Colt, Ollie? I have half a box in my purse.
No, damn it, it's a Smith. I have enough rounds for two reloads, Smoke.
I'm not much better off. I'm glad you have your lightning along, Sal. How is it they didn't take it off you?
Never knew I had it. They might be a pack of hardened criminals, but being Easterners, they wouldn't think of a lady carrying a gun.
Well, that door won't hold them long. I suggest we find places among these stacks of cargo and make them come to us. Sal, it might be better if you took up a place above, on that catwalk.
Think I've forgotten how to hit what I shoot at?
No, damn it. I only want you out of the way of any danger.
I've handled worse than this pack.
You're our backup, all right?
Sally scurried off to the cast iron stairway at the other side of the building. Oliver Johnson found a convenient hiding place atop a mound of tarpaulin-covered machine parts. Smoke Jensen surveyed the positions, making careful note of where Sally hunkered down behind a concealing plank on the catwalk. Then he faded into the mounds of unidentified items. Five men spilled inside. Another quintet followed, while the remaining longshoremen spread out to secure all exits. The first set moved directly to the center of the warehouse.
Someone check the office and make sure you cover every way out of here. Spread out and start looking down the aisles.
Gosh. What the hell? Where are you, Joel? Are you all right?
Oliver Johnson hefted the long wooden leverage handle of a chain come-along. He moved to the far side of the pallet and peered into the gloom for another target. One appeared two aisles over, only to suddenly disappear as a big brawny arm whipped out and yanked the uneasy stevedore off his feet. Smoke Jensen was rolling up the score. Suddenly, a knife stuck in a wooden crate 3 inches from the throat of Smoke Jensen. Smoke's Colt drilled a hole dead center in the knife thrower's chest. Two longshoremen rushed to the place where their companion had had the fatal encounter with Smoke Jensen. Smoke saw him, though, and moved in on cat feet. Brian Gallagher could be considered one of the brighter of Old Boyle's gang of wharf rats. He convinced two of the other wharf rats that they could get a better view of the warehouse from up on the catwalk. They quickly moved up the stairs and began to cross the metal walkway. He had only turned the corner at the far end when he came upon a delicious bonus. The young woman brought to the warehouse as a captive sat near the barrier and peered over one thick plank.
Well, look what we have here. You have something for me, pretty thing?
I sure do. Something for you and your friends.
This was all going to hell right before his eyes, and Seamus Quarren simply could not believe his terrible luck.
All right, boys, we're pulling out. We're leaving, you hear, Smoke Jensen? Oh, don't be shooting us in the back now.
What's to say you won't lie for us outside?
Devil take you, man. If we've had enough of taste of your sneaking Indian ways, we have. We'll not be doing you any more harm.
Not entirely convinced of the truthfulness of the one he heard called Seamus, Smoke Jensen and Oliver Johnson made a thorough search of the warehouse floor before relaxing their guard. They came together at the foot of the catwalk stairs. Smoke glanced upward.
They're gone, Sal. Come on down.
Why did they leave?
They must have decided they were outnumbered.
Do you think it's safe to go outside?
We'll give it a while. Now, tell me everything that happened since I saw you last at breakfast.
Quickly, Sally related her day. She could see how the account of her abduction angered Smoke. She went on, giving as much detail as possible about her ride through Boston to the dockyards. For all the lack of adequate light, Smoke noticed with amusement that Oliver Johnson made copious notes on a small pad.
You have visions of filling the front page, I take it?
That I do. I already have the headline drafted. Smoke Jensen foils kidnapping gang. Herald reported witness to derring do. How's that?
Smoke, I've been thinking.
What's that?
I told you about the one called Sean and his friend, Connor, getting drunk and talking about Phineas Lathrop and his relationship to Rex Davidson. Sean also said Lathrop was on his way to New York to round up 30 or more hoodlums to take west with him. Are you going to go after him?
Looks like the lecture tour has been cut short. I'll take the first train tomorrow for New York.
I'm going with you.
No, you're not. You'll go on back to Keene with your father and brothers.
Smoke!
No argument. I'm going after Lathrop and his partners. That's what's important. I don't want to be worried about your safety. Or to have to rescue you from kidnappers again. I mean it, Sal. You're to go back to New Hampshire.
What if you can't find them in New York?
Then I'll be headed after them until I do catch up.
The Sugarloaf is my home, too. I'll not be left behind if you head off to the High Lonesome.
No, of course you won't. You'll have to join me in New York, or take a private car on the next train.
It would be easier if I came along from the start.
No, Sally.
All right, Smoke. I'll do it your way.
You can't keep me from going.
What? You still hungry for a story?
Well, yes. That too. But the fighting has been sort of exciting so far. I'd like to get another taste, if possible.
Good God. Reporters.
When they arrived in Grand Central Station, the first destination was the files of the New York Ledger, one of the leading dailies. There, they found vague references in the financial section to the offices of Middleton and Asher, but no references to Phineas Lathrop. Not unexpectedly, when they located the office complex on the fifth floor of a marble-faced building on Wall Street, Smoke and Oliver found the premises closed and apparently vacated.
What now?
I can track a man across Bear Rock if I have to. But I don't know the first damn thing about finding someone in a town this size.
The thing to do is find a nearby saloon. A gentleman's bar, as a matter of fact. We can put out the word and see what we learn.
Why, damn, that's exactly what I'd do in any western town. Go to a saloon and let it be known who I wanted to find.
After a visit to the third gentleman's bar with an obligatory drink in each, Smoke called a halt to their inquiries for the day.
Now, we let the word get around. By tomorrow, we should hear something.
Where to now?
How about Central Park? I must have sold 50 horses to the riding school there. I'd sort of like to see what's been done with them.
Mind if I tag along?
In the small office of the academy, Smoke met the man who had so far been only a name on a letter. He seemed genuinely pleased to meet Smoke Jensen, and they talked of the horses purchased over the years. Some had been sold outright to wealthy clients as gifts for wives or children. Others still walked the tree-lined trails of the park. A few, who had grown older, had been sold to the New York transit system.
There's one I keep back. He's reserved for some special, very skilled riders. Sort of an outlaw.
I never sell outlaws.
He became one, though. Really, it might be said that it was in part my fault. I allowed our Mr. Armbruster to take him out several days in a row. That was before Mr. Armbruster purchased a horse of his own. I'm afraid Mr. Armbruster maltreated the animal. We never knew until we had a chance to observe how he dealt with his personal mount. Then it became clear. Unfortunately, we didn't catch it in time, and there was no legal action that could be taken.
I think I'd like to have your outlaw saddled. If I'm here a few days, maybe I can turn him around for you.
Well, that's most generous of you, Mr. Jensen. I appreciate it, you can be sure. I'll see that he's brought up at once.
Out on the bridle pass some 20 minutes later, Oliver Johnson found out what all first-time riders learn about riding horseback. His thighs started to ache, and he strongly believed he had sustained irreversible damage to his crotch. He endured it, though, in order to point out the ambitious building projects, endowed by such wealthy men as Granville Dodge and the grandson of John Jacob Astor.
Astor got rich on the fur trade, as I'm sure you know.
He was rich before he started the American Fur Company, though from what people say back here, he was generous with what he had.
Three men blocked the path ahead. Two of them moved aside as Smoke and Ollie approached. The third, a stout, heavily muscled individual with a shock of coarse black hair, did a double take, his face tightening as Smoke rode past. Ollie Johnson started too, and then he put a blank mask on his face. Once beyond the trio, he spoke to Smoke.
Believe me, I'm not imagining things. We just rode past Phineas Lathrop and Victor Middleton. The one with them who looks like a stevedore is Sean O'Boyle, the cause of your recent troubles.
By God, let's go get him.
They're bound to have more men close by. Just because they're dressed in fancy riding habits doesn't mean Lathrop and Middleton are any less thugs than O'Boyle. It's too isolated here.
Which makes me like it all the more. I mean to get them off my back for good.
With that, Smoke Jensen wheeled his horse and put it to a trot. Certain of the folly of this course, Oliver Johnson hurried to catch up anyway. When he joined Smoke, his face mirrored his misery.
I didn't bring my gun along.
I have a spare.
When they rounded a curve in the Sylvan Trail, Smoke discovered that their quarry had disappeared. He sprinted ahead to a break in the trees that lined the bridle path. Oliver tried desperately to keep up.
Damnation! It's Smoke Jensen!
They recognize me, that's for sure.
Smoke shot him a quick glance and saw four men in the process of trying to mount horses with which they were definitely unfamiliar. He touched blunt spurs to his mount and sped off after Lathrop and the others. Their quarry entered another clump of trees and faded from sight. 30 yards separated them from Lathrop, and it proved to be their undoing. By the time Smoke Jensen entered the Grove of Ash, he found three chest-heaving horses and not a sign of the men they sought.
Split up. We'll circle these trees.
Smoke made a hurried search and had to concede that Lathrop and company had gotten cleanly away. Suddenly, Smoke turned and saw one of the Boston hard cases coming on horseback, pulling a small revolver from under his coat. Without regard for their comrade, the remaining three fled with all the speed they could muster from their rented horses. Implacably, Smoke came after them. One of the longshoremen showed even less aptitude than his companions. Smoke raised his pistol. Smoke's powerful horse brought him within two lengths of the men he chased by the time they reached the walking path that bordered the meadow. Gauging the distance, Smoke freed his boots from the stirrups and launched himself at the trailing hard case. A quick grasp of the situation encouraged the partner of the fallen man. He reined sharply, dismounted unsteadily, and lumbered toward the prone pair. New York sunlight glinted off the keen edge of the knife in his hand. Sensing the danger, Smoke did a snap roll sideways and snaked the .45 Colt from his holster.
Two for two. That's not bad. Old Abner Doubleday would say you were batting .500. Some of O'Boyle's union trash. What do we do now?
Return the horses, and then pay another visit to the office of Victor Middleton.
Their trip to Wall Street proved nearly as fruitless as the previous one. A stout, matronly woman who claimed the title of office manageress greeted Smoke Jensen and Oliver Johnson icily after Smoke's intimidating size and harsh growl had frightened the mail secretary into summoning the Valkyrie of the financial district.
Mr. Middleton is not presently in and is not expected for some time.
I saw Mr. Middleton with a Mr. Lathrop less than 2 hours ago in Central Park.
Yes.
Indeed. Both of them. And five unsavory associates.
Oliver's description of old Boyle and company thawed her somewhat. It seems she agreed with them.
I do believe you are correct. There was some talk of acquainting a number of his lesser employees with the intricacies of horseback riding. For the life of me, I do not understand why they delayed so long. Both Mr. Middleton and Mr. Lathrop should already be boarding the train west.
Where in the west?
I'm not at liberty to disclose such information.
You could reveal your knowledge to the police instead.
The police?
Mm-hmm. Exactly where is Phineas Lathrop headed?
Who might you be that I should tell you these things?
My name is Smoke Jensen.
Mr. Lathrop, Mr. Cabot, and Mr. Middleton are taking the train to Denver. That's in Colorado.
Yeah, I know.
They're taking along some 30 of, if I must say so, the most disreputable gentlemen from here in New York that I have ever seen. Another 20 like individuals from Boston, I believe, are to learn to ride and follow on tomorrow's train.
Over breakfast, Smoke Jensen glowered at the bold black headlines of the New York Sun.
Crazed frontiersmen loose in Central Park. Well, at least they spelled my name right. Listen to this. The notorious Smoke Jensen, gunfighter and mountain man, went on a rampage in Boston, ruthlessly murdering innocent dock workers and leaving a trail of widows and orphans behind. Only yesterday, Smoke Jensen raised havoc in Central Park. Two men were left dead, and four more seriously injured. What the Sun does not understand is why the police questioned and then released this dangerous hired killer. Ugh, what a load of crap. Typical yellow journalism.
Hey, I thought it was a well-written article. By far, it's the best of the lot.
Present company accepted, Ollie. You've proven your worth more than once.
You're too kind, Smoke. I don't mean that to sound sarcastic. I'm serious. You've opened some doors for me. So what I'm wondering is, what do we do now?
I haven't any choice but to wait for Sally. I don't see there's much for you to do.
Of course there is. I could use some help looking into the background on Middleton, Asher, and company. Then I suppose I should pick up a few things for the trip.
What trip?
Out west, naturally. I'm sitting on the story of the decade, if not the century, and there's no way I'm going to be kept out of it.
Ollie, you said yourself that Middleton and Asher are the key to this. You can handle that better from right here. No need running off to the Colorado Mountains.
No, the story is you, Smoke. Where you go, I go. At least until I have the whole account of this. Think of it. Conquest in the name of a criminal empire. Or make that Smoke Jensen conquers criminal empire, ends reign of terror in far west. How about that?
Too long, Ollie.
Then how about Smoke Jensen ends reign of terror in Rockies? You like that?
First, there has to be a reign of terror in the mountains. And second, I have to end it. You're getting ahead of yourself, Ollie.
Maybe so, but there is a story here, and I want to be the one to write it. And I promise, no yellow journalism. Deal?
Oh, these men we heard about are dangerous. Being out of their element could likely make them more so.
You know I can shoot and take care of myself, right? Well, then, I rest my case.
All right, you're coming along.
I thought so.
Flames raged in the barn. Buford Early watched long orange columns of sparks shoot from the open door to the haymow.
Damn it! That'll lower the property value. And if those sparks set something else off, it'll be even worse.
Stray bullets had shattered a kerosene lantern and set the place ablaze.
You men! Watch those other buildings. Don't let the fire spread.
Early's order was obeyed without question, but it hadn't always been that way. Until a short time ago, when Buford Early had shot a ranch hand and saved the life of Wade Tanner, he'd been viewed with contempt by the hard-faced killers who followed the man Phineas Lathrop had put in charge. Tonight, they'd come closer to Smoke Jensen's Sugarloaf Ranch than ever before. Early watched the hooded raiders spread out with wet blankets and buckets of water to extinguish any sparks that lighted on the bunkhouse and tool sheds. Still others hunted around the barnyard for stray hands who had not as yet been run off.
Mr. Tanner, it appears we have added another jewel to Mr. Lathrop's crown. I can't wait until we take over the Sugarloaf.
Considerable complaining had gone on all the way from New York City to Dodge City, Kansas. None of the former longshoremen in the O'Boyle gang liked the idea of Dodge being the end of the line for them. When Phineas Lathrop appeared on the loading platform, he soon heard about it from Sean O'Boyle and Eamon Finnegan.
Sure, the train would get us to Denver a lot faster.
Lathrop had forgotten how big Finnegan was. His broad, thick shoulders bulged the cloth coat he wore over a flannel shirt. A shock of black hair hung over his brow. Finnegan had one flaw, which Lathrop had taken note of at their first meeting. The black Irish bruiser had the florid complexion and ruddy, broken-vessel'd nose of a heavy drinker. Only in his late 20s and already caught up in the Irish disease, as they called it. Such a man could quickly go unstable.
Your introduction to horseback riding in Central Park was entirely too short.
No, half me boys is still saddle sore from that encounter, Mr. Lathrop. It's sheer foolishness making a man ride astride a horse when there's this perfectly good train to take us on.
Nonsense. Riding to Denver will toughen you up for what is ahead.
O'Boyle looked again at the line of heavy western saddles, the leather pouches behind the cantle bulging with camp gear and boxes of ammunition.
We'll be hampered by all the overloads.
You won't be carrying the load, Mr. O'Boyle. The horses will. Now get your men organized and take these saddles to the livery down the street. Your mounts have been selected.
But Sean O'Boyle was complaining to Phineas Lathrop yet again on the third night stop on the trail from Dodge City to Denver.
I'm telling you, Mr. Lathrop, it's sure that we're going crazy out here we are. It's too quiet. Nothing but birds singing it is and bugs buzzing around. And at night, Christ, it's some spooky wolves howling.
They're coyotes.
But whatever the hell they are, it's got us all wore thin. We need something to do.
Such as what?
Well, me and some of the boys have been thinking on that. We saw that stagecoach yesterday, and we read about stage holdups in them books about the West. Conor O'Fallon and I sort of Thought it might be something to while away our time we did. If, you know, we was to, rob one of the coaches.
I see. Just the two of you?
No, sir. We're not daft, man. Patrick Boyd and Seamus Corrin have a hankering to join us. Sure, four of us could take one man with one little bitty shotgun.
Don't be too sure. Those shotgun guards are tough men. Wells Fargo doesn't hire eastern dandies to protect their strongboxes.
Are you calling us boys dandies, Mr. Lathrop?
Oh, no, no, of course not.
Well, I should think not. Now you've got us decked out all abristle with firearms. When the stage folk get a look at that, they'll see your ease, and right enough they will.
I could order you not to, but this time I won't. Take the men you've picked and go rob your stage. There will be one coming back around 10 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Finnegan and I will continue on with the others. You can catch up at night camp.
Ah, thank you, sir. And we'll be sharing fair as fair.
Sit in the high driver's seat of the Concorde coach behind a team of powerful rumped bays, Walt Tilton could sense through the reins that the off-wheeler had started to slacken, letting the others pull the load. The gelding ran just fast enough to keep up, but not to put strain on the harness.
Come on, you lazy so-and-so, Jasper, put your shoulders into it!
How you always know?
Well, Slim, I've been driving these rigs for nigh on to 20 years now. After a while, you get to feel for what the teams are doing. It's sort of like you knowing when to put hands on that scattergun of yours.
Well, that's plain instinct. It's like I can sense trouble before it happens. Like right now.
You funning me?
Nope.
Slim nodded ahead along the high road. Four men in long white linen dusters appeared suddenly from behind tall brush. Each held a weapon, although in an awkward position, as though ill-trained in its use. The one to left of center rose in his stirrups and pointed the muzzle of his six-gun skyward.
Stand and deliver!
Ha! Stand and deliver? Who the hell says that?
Sounds like we got us a paddy, highwayman.
Walt Tilton didn't even slow the stage. As the other scoundrels brought their guns into ready positions, Slim leveled the 10-gauge. Double-aught buckshot turned the face of Patrick Boyne into a wet red smear. Three 33 caliber pellets from the second barrel punched painfully into the left shoulder of Connor O'Fallon. O'Fallon awkwardly turned his mount away and put spurs to the flanks. Slim quickly reloaded the 10-gauge and fired again, knocking Seamus out of the saddle this time. Sean O'Boyle glowered at the fallen Seamus Quorn and then turned back to fire on the driver, heedless of the danger that created. His bullet splintered wood from the seat between the legs of Walt Tilton.
Shit! That's a bit close to the sweet meat. Whoa! Slim, kill that bastard! I've had about enough of this!
But Sean O'Boyle had definitely felt what it was like to truly take a dance in the West, and he didn't like it one damn bit. He quickly took off in the wake of Connor O'Fallon.
You dumb sons of bitches! Well, let's get that wounded one and take him with us to Dodge City. Stand and deliver. Stand and deliver my ass!
When the Denver-bound train carrying Smoke and Sally Jensen arrived in Ellsworth, the town was abuzz with the latest novelty in outlawry. The Dodge City newspaper carried a detailed account. Smoke read it carefully, but he didn't share in the amusement it generated in others.
I'll give you one guess as to who those funny talking dudes are who tried to rob the stage.
Some of Lathrop's New York and Boston thugs. What do you suppose went wrong?
I don't know. But it's worth finding out.
We're going to Dodge City, Smoke?
You're going on to Denver, where I want you to take a room at the Brown Palace, and Oliver will go with you. I'm thinking of a short detour through Dodge City.
Do you think you'll learn anything worth the time to go there?
Considering that they hang a man for just about any offense out here, yeah. I expect some cooperation.
Our eastern gangs have a strong bond of loyalty.
You sound almost proud. The way I see it, the sight of some new 3/4-inch hemp rope with 13 wraps to the knot will loosen the most loyal tongue.
Smoke does really well in getting information from people who don't want to talk.
In that case, enjoy Dodge City.
Thank you.
Ford County Sheriff Pat McCraney greeted Smoke Jensen with a firm handshake.
You're a bit far from the bailiwick, Marshal.
I am, but we have reason to believe these men were headed for Denver.
Are they wanted for anything else?
I'm not sure, Pat. How many were there on the holdup?
Four.
Only four? There should have been a lot more than that.
Oh, they came through here, a whole lot of them. Got off a train from back east and took horses out of town headed west. All of them talked peculiar. First batch seemed to talk through their noses.
First batch?
Oh, yeah. They had an overnight for the city of Denver. Kept to themselves. Didn't get in any trouble. A rough-looking lot, though.
And the other?
Most sounded Irish. There was some who talked real flat. You know what I mean? A sort of a fought in the market. Ever hear anything like that?
Boston. That's the way people from Boston sometimes talk.
What a whole lot of single rough-looking fellas headed to Denver for?
Maybe to work in the mines, but I doubt it.
You want to talk to the prisoner?
That's what I came here for. I shouldn't be long.
Take your time, son.
Once in the jail cell, Smoke Jensen looked over a crestfallen, pain-racked Seamus Quern.
I know you. You were in the warehouse with my wife.
Don't know what you're talking about, lad.
I'm Smoke Jensen. Does that refresh your memory?
Smoke Jailer! Jailer, help me! I'll be murdered!
Smoke grabbed Quern by the shoulder and spun him around.
The sheriff's got a hearing problem. It's just you and me, Quern.
How'd you know me name?
I got it from the sheriff. You're Seamus Quern, aren't you? You're in Sean O'Boyle's gang of dockyard thugs. What are you doing headed toward Denver?
You know so goddamn much. You answer the questions.
Did you know they still consider stagecoach robbery a hanging offense out here?
That's not true, is it?
Do I look like I'm kidding?
Oh, Jesus. I never counted on a rope around me neck, I didn't. Isn't there anything I can do to get the judge to go easy on me?
You can try cooperating. Tell me what I want to know, and I'll put in a good word for you. What you and your gutter snipe friends didn't know is that I'm a deputy U.S. Marshal. My word can carry a lot of weight with the courts.
From that point on, it went a lot easier than Smoke Jensen had anticipated. Within half an hour, he had learned everything Seamus Quern knew or had guessed about Phineas Lathrop's operation and his eventual goal. Sally had not been misled about the danger to herself, and Ollie had been right in labeling it a criminal empire. Phineas Lathrop cut a sour gaze around his dingy surroundings. He'd been forced into hiding at this third-rate fleabag hotel in Denver by the unbelievable stupidity of Sean O'Boyle.
How could anyone be so stupid, so inept? And how much Quern knows of the actual plans, I have no way of knowing. Fools!
Victor Middleton wore the expression of a caged animal.
Let's get out of this disgusting pigsty and get some fresh air. Something to eat. A good stiff drink.
All right. We have to be careful, though. We don't know what that lout Quern has told the law.
To hell with him. He may have bled to death by the time he got to Dodge City. Here in Denver, we're simply honest businessmen, going about our affairs like anyone else.
I see. And that's why we're living in this rat's nest.
Smoke Jensen caught up with his wife and the Boston Globe reporter at the Brown Palace in Denver late the next day. They had a late, sumptuous dinner, stayed the night, and caught the early morning milk train to Big Rock. Monte Carson had been alerted by telegraph, and he met the trio of weary travelers on the depot platform. Monte led the way back to his office.
Piers, you got some influential people riled at you, Smoke. Some of those eastern reporters have been filing stories with the papers in Denver, Pueblo, Dodge City, St. Louis, near everywhere west of the Mississippi, I'd reckon. They ain't saying nice things about you either.
We got enough of that back there, Monty.
Well, that's why I can't work out. Why in hell you brung along one with you, Smoke?
Ollie's okay, Monty. He filed 5 favorable stories. 3 of them even got published.
Ain't hardly a fart in a cyclone, Smoke. For every good word he wrote about you, there's 100 bad ones, and they all got in print.
Is that why I noticed a coolness from the good folks at the depot?
You could say that. Seems they forgot real quick that out here we judge a man by how tall he walks and how much sand he's got, not by what some East Coast horse's ass writes about him. Sorry, ma'am.
Oh, that's quite all right, Monty. I agree with you entirely.
Has there been a lot of strangers showing up around town lately? Pale faces with arms and shoulders too big for the rest of them, say?
There's been a few. Can't rightly place what's oddest about them. You're right about some of them shape. Hell, they got wrists the size of some men's biceps.
Longshoremen, dock workers from Boston and New York City. When they're working at their regular jobs, they wrestle around bales of cargo all day that it would take you and me both to move. Let me guess, the ones from New York arrived first, right?
Yeah, only they didn't hang around town long. Looks sorry as hell to be on a horse's back, but they grained and rested their mounts overnight and took off to the northwest. You ask me, they'd have been happier walking.
Don't underestimate them, Sheriff. They're dangerous.
How's that? Oh, they had plenty of shooting irons along, but the experiences of a lifetime tell me they didn't have too much idea of how best to use them.
No, Ollie's right, Monty.
Smoke explained what had happened in Boston and New York of the bungled stage robbery outside Dodge City and some of what he had learned of the Eastern Criminal Network from Oliver Johnson. Monty shook his head more than once during the recitation.
So what you're saying is that these boys could be a real threat to folks hereabouts? Well, there's been some unsavory deals struck, I can tell you that. Folks won't talk about it much. Seem real scared. But they sold their places anyhow and left the area.
I'm liking this even less.
Well, now that you're back, Smoke, I suppose there's nothing for it, but you and me go out and find these Eastern hard cases of yours.
That's my idea exactly.
You're not leaving me out.
No, I wouldn't dream of it. As soon as we get Sally back to the Sugarloaf, the three of us are going out and kick the hell out of Lathrop's hooligans.